70 in 7. A win today, Hockey O'Clock Original.
Win today, Hockey O'Clock.
In diesem Augenblick wird es jetzt richtig hitzig.
Yeah, und die Scheibe kollert über die Linie.
Mit mittendrin statt nur dabei.
Das ist unglaublich, was die hier zelebrieren.
Nice move, another nice move.
It is indeed happening. A new podcast series that's debuting here on Win Today, Hockey O'Clock. It's called 70 in 7. And it's because of the fact that the person opposite of me is turning 70 years old, incredibly enough, in a couple of weeks' time. So we're trying to dedicate 7 episodes to 70 years of hockey and a great hockey life to the person that is known and renowned as Greg Holst. Player legend, coaching legend, that is Greg Holst. I'm so happy that you're doing this with me. So thankful that you're now on Win Today Hockey O'Clock.
Well, Martin, thank you very much. As you know, I was a little bit skeptical about doing this, but and we had talked about a possible book and now maybe this podcast. But as I start thinking back and I agreed to do this, boy, does it bring back fantastic memories of how it all began in Montreal and when I was a kid. So thank you for offering to do this. And it started out and became quite a journey.
Journey being a key word, and I guess I have to preface this a little bit because this is going to be a journey for the both of us. We don't know where we'll eventually end up, but this is a series where we're looking to tell the stories of your life, tell how hockey basically took over your life, how you fell in love with the great sport of hockey. And this is a series where I really will try to do right by you. A lot of people already got back to me and sent word and stories about you. We're going to hear from a lot of friends, acquaintances, a lot of people that either you touched or that you got in, or that they got in touch with you. And speaking of those ground rules, we decided to do this series entirely in English. This is a first for me too, because I've done extensive series on great hockey careers, but only ever in German. So this time around, we're going to flip it around. Now it's going to be in English. And for all the people out there that are listening to this, please do understand this is an Austrian talking with a Canadian. I've never been abroad for more than 2 or 3 years. So if there's a tiny little grammatical mistake or if it's sometimes hard to understand me, please excuse that. I'll try to stick to proper grammar and vocabulary as well as possible. We're going to record 7 parts. 1 part per decade of your being on planet Earth. This is part 1 of 7. This will be about your first 10 years after your mom's given birth to you. And these episodes will start appearing from January 3rd, which is today onwards. Each and every Wednesday from January 3rd onwards, there'll be a new episode covering 1 decade of your life, and this will eventually conclude with all 7 episodes that we have recorded up until that point on January 21st, when we do celebrate 70 years of you being on planet Earth. How does it sound to your ears? How does it make you feel when you hear that you'll be turning 70 years old in February?
Actually, it's a very good question you ask, because when I turned 60, it really didn't feel any different than 50. But this one here feels a lot different it's actually hard to believe where the time has gone. When I got an email this past summer about having a 50th anniversary with the Kingston Canadians in the OHL where I played junior, it kind of hit me. Wow, that's 50 years ago that I played junior hockey. So it just shows you that there's no time to waste. So if whatever you want to get done in your life, get it done, because we're not on the back nine anymore. We're on the last few holes.
Spoiler alert, we're going to talk about the Kingston Canadians in episode 2, but this being the first episode out of 7, this is where we kind of lay the basis for or foundation for everything that follows. And I asked a question a couple of times to former Austrian hockey greats. You're a Canadian hockey great. You are an Austrian hockey great. You are renowned as a coach here. You've been a TV pundit for the past couple of years. You've basically gone through all the careers you can have in hockey, playing the sport, coaching the sport, broadcasting, and making the sport even more popular. But what is the very first memory that comes to mind when you think of hockey? When was the first time you ever put on skates and went out onto the ice?
Well, you know, I'm going to remember as best I can, of course, with help from my mom and dad. It was 4 or 5 when I don't remember putting the cheese cutters on with, you know, the skates with the 4 blades. But I think that was my first kind of feeling on the ice. But then at 5, and I have the skates at home, or actually I think I have them here, leather skates, soft, loose skates that mom and dad bought me, I think for 95 cents, they were used. And at approximately 5, at the oldest 6, I put those on and tore across the ice. And I vaguely remember that. My mother has better adjectives to describe that first time. I vaguely remember, but that was the start. And when she saw me fly across that ice, she goes, "Oh boy, let the fun begin."
As you already started talking about your mother, can we just quickly do an intersection right here and talk about her and how great she is? When she got hold of the fact that there'll be a podcast series, she started sending emails at the advanced age. And for her, obviously still young age of 90 plus, she sent emails around where she kind of looked back on some of the things that happened during your early life, some great memories. And just a quick one, how great's your mom?
Well, she's 93 plus, and her memory, as my dad's is absolutely amazing. And when she heard I was going to do this TV special or podcast, she didn't quite know what it was. She was pretty excited. And I think what it did also, not only bringing back memories for me, I think it brings back a lot of special memories for my mom and dad.
I want to quote from the very first email that she sent around, and I don't want to disappoint Mrs. Holst. So she opened up by saying and typing, "I hear they're making a special TV show about you. I'm really sorry. This is not a TV show. This is a podcast series. This is for people's listening pleasure only. But hopefully someone's going to play it to her. It's a 7-part special. It's going to be a 7-hour plus adventure over 7 weeks, where we'll touch on a lot of memories and a lot of things that went on in your life. And maybe, just maybe, there is a Netflix or Amazon Prime coming around, and eventually they're going to say, you know what, we have to put this into moving images, and we'll put this into a TV series. or TV show indeed, but for the time being, we'll just be talking to each other for the foreseeable future and the next couple of weeks. And in that email, she continued, "I would love to hear what you say. The first 10 years, we wanted you to be a violinist, playing the violin. You did the hockey on your own. We really supported your hockey. You wanted to be a hockey player from the age of 10, playing outside for a few years, even played on the street in the summer. The only thing you ever asked for at Christmas was a hockey net." So we kind of got ahead of ourselves a little bit here, but it's just so nice that your parents wanted something completely different for you and you chose the path of hockey. At what point were you certain that the sport of hockey would accompany you throughout your life?
Well, you can never be certain. I just love playing. And, you know, that email brought back memories for mom too. And, you know, it ends up by saying, "Your biggest fan and supporter, your mother." So not only, but I loved playing baseball and I loved playing football and I loved hockey probably the most, but we played sports all day. And when I think back, some of the stories I'm going to tell you about what I did, how creative I was when I was a kid and how I learned to stick handle, I hope some young players listen and figure out how to get out of the house, put the cell phone down, put the iPad down, get out and be creative and play sports. Because every piece of grass that we saw, when we had a circle up around our house in Montreal North, there was a couple of circles with a small area of grass. We would play tackle football with 2, 4, or 6 players. And you learn to make lateral moves, be quick, change your speeds. And it was so much fun. So now put me on the ice on my skates. Now that's one of the reasons I learned how to have such great moves, was actually playing football. So mom said it right. It was hockey and sports all day in the summer. We used to make our own nets and we used to have so much snow back then. The snow plow, the snow blower would come by and carve out maybe 1.5 meters of straight snow on the sides of the street. So we would carve out our nets into the snow. And we were so creative. We used blankets and my dad's ties to make goalie pads. So you got to picture this, what we were doing. In the summer, in the winter, it was hockey, of course, in the summer was baseball, football also. But when I think back how creative I was, it's absolutely interesting. It's an interesting story to the things I used to do. First of all, in the house downstairs, I'd put Shelly, my sister, young sister, in nets all the time. And I'd have a tennis ball or a softball, and I would be shooting and stick handling. And she was in nets. I felt so bad for her. But hey, I said, just try to stop it. Even though she couldn't, she sure tried hard. So God bless her soul for helping out. But if you have another question, I'll give you a couple of things that I did that now that I think back were actually quite genius.
You'll see and understand that I got so many questions over the course of the next couple of weeks. But before we get to why you got so creative and what led you there and what you eventually did, maybe just set the scene a little bit. We're talking about you being born on February 21st, 1954 in Montreal, in Canada. So we're talking about growing up in also kind of post-war Canada, albeit World War II had been concluded for almost 9 years back then. But still, growing up in Canada, in Montreal, what was it like to grow up in the mid to late 50s in that city?
Well, now that you bring back, you know, I start seeing some of the memories. We were living in Rosemount on a steep street, and I think I almost got hit by a car one day walking up that street with mom. And I think that's when mom and dad said, hey, we're going to move. This is too dangerous. And we actually visited all the places that we're going to talk about this past summer with my mom and dad. Went to that Rosemount on that street. I think it was 11th Avenue. So we moved to Montreal North, which was, you know, primarily French area. And we had a small place, but it was great. But in the back of that place, we had a little backyard, but there was all fields. Now, of course, it's all houses, but it was all fields with different size of ponds. So these little hockey rinks to me, oh boy, this was fantastic. I'd have a small one, maybe 7-8 meters long. Then I'd have a meter of grass or two in between the next pond. So how did I become creative? I would go out there by myself, minus 10, minus 20 degrees, by myself for hours. And I would stick handle on the first pond. I would flip it forehand or backhand over that little grassy patch, run across the steps, and stick handle again. So these are the things that we're teaching kids to do now, 60 years later. This is freaking unbelievable. And it was so cold sometimes. One time I remember, but it was just fun for me. I wasn't thinking about anything else but just stick handling, flipping the pucks around, running across the grass. One day I remember going out there and it was freezing. And I fell and I cut my chin open. And it was a nice big gash, which I needed stitches obviously after. Oh man, I thought this was just freaking unbelievable. So I go into the house, I say, Ma, take a look. And she goes, oh my God, what happened? And I stuck my finger inside the cut in my chin. It was so freaking cold, I couldn't feel a thing. Boy, the good old days. But Martin, I would do this for hours. And if it wasn't on those ponds, I was stick handling on the streets, in the house, putting tennis balls off walls at the school, knocking. It was so much fun. And let me talk about one thing too in the creative part. We used to skate, let's say a half a mile, a kilometer from the house. And back in the day, the streets and the sidewalks were hard snow. We could actually skate on that hard snow. So we would skate absolutely all the way to the rink, deep snow outside the ice surface. Ice was sometimes rough, but it didn't matter. We would get on there and play for hours. Now, I never really knew how good I was, but I was obviously good because we would take the two or three best players and play against six or seven of the other kids. And when that puck, this is how times have changed. When that puck went over into the deep snow, we went and got it because we wanted the puck. That's how I learned to stick handle. I could stick handle in a freaking telephone booth. So whether it was on the hard snow on the streets, flipping pucks around those little ponds, which I remember distinctly, how much fun was this growing up? Absolutely fantastic memories.
Let me just ask you a thing about Montreal North, as the district is called. I think there are 19 districts in the city of Montreal. And as of right now, and I think it's a census from 2011, so we're talking 1.5 decades away from that, obviously. The people growing up in Montreal North had their native languages were French for more than half the people at 53.7%, English at only 3.9%, and other native or mother tongues clocking in at 42.4%. How come that English was your primary language and not French? Or did you go back and forth all the time?
Well, I went back and forth. Mom and Dad were English. Dad could speak some French, Mom very little. But I went to English school. I think it was Maple Hill to start, then a little later, Malcolm Campbell. But I went to English school, and at home it was English. But other than Bobby Turcotte and another friend, everything was French. Baseball was French. Hockey was French. Mostly on the street was French. So that's how I kind of came bilingual. It was just speaking both. It just came kind of naturally to me because of all the sports I played. And I played for the team, I'll tell you after, who I played for was all French. And the league was 95% French. So it's interesting that you brought up the stat of 3.9% English. Wow, that's pretty crazy.
Did that change over the years, or was that the case in the late 50s too, that basically a minuscule amount of people had English as their mother tongue?
Oh, I think Montreal North was, I'm not sure if it was 3.9%, but it was primarily French back then too.
You go out on the streets, you play all day, you play in the freezing cold, and I guess it's the perfect time to bring up an email from your mom again, where she, and I quote, wrote, "You played outside hockey a few years, and we got warm in a shed or a small cabin, I think. It was heated with a stove." And then she asked, "Wood or coal?" Maybe you can remember. And then she went on, "I think you played in the arena at 10 years old. I think you kids skated fast to keep warm. It was bloody cold in those days." And you already alluded to it a little bit with the cut that you had on your chin and you not being able to feel anything because it was so freaking cold. But let's dissect this email a little bit. Did you indeed warm up in a shed or in a cabin? Do you still know if it was heated with wood or coal? And how freezing cold was it indeed?
Well, let me tell you this. I remember those little shacks up at the Salt Park. I remember these little cabins we get in. It was freezing. And our feet would be so cold that when we were almost in tears. But if there's such a thing as a good pain, our toes, we take off our skates, our feet would be burning. It was like almost tears of joy. But yeah, I remember those little fires. I'd have to say it was wood back then. And we were just freezing. But you know what? We all did it because we loved it. And we used to try plastic bags on our feet inside our skates, extra socks, we tried everything we could. But I remember how many times, not only my friends, our toes were absolutely frozen. Then it turned into fire. Maybe that's why I got so quick on the ice.
The interesting part is it appears as if sports dominated your life in its entirety, but I guess there was school back then too. How was that kind of relationship between you and sports, you and school, you and friends, you and other things? How does one have to think about that?
Well, I think it was just a normal life for me. It was just to go to school. Couldn't wait to get home. I was always pretty smart in school, whether it was flashcards with the math going around the class. I was always naturally pretty smart, but eventually I didn't love studying, but I guess sports always seemed to get in the way. It was a normal life. I went to school, got on the bus, came home. If I had homework, I did it as fast as I could. And it was outdoors, playing sports, no matter what it was. Just running around. But you know, Mark, I got to tell you how times have changed. You know, we weren't a wealthy family at all, but we always had food on the table. And we had a TV. I don't think we had a TV when we were in Rosemount, but we did get a TV. And the only two shows that I watched in black and white was Disneyland on Sunday at 6 o'clock and Hockey Night in Canada, Montreal against Toronto. Remember those games? On Saturday night, Hockey Night in Canada. But I did sneak out of bed. Mom and Dad, I'm sure, know this. I'm not sure if I snuck out of bed or stayed up late, but I used to watch on a Friday night at 11 o'clock Combat with Vic Morrow. I never forgot that. It wasn't every week, but every now and then I snuck out and watched Combat. So because there was no TV and no handies and no cell phones, what are we doing? We are just outdoor climbing trees, chasing around the streets, getting in fights, having fun, playing all the sports. What a way to grow up. And I tell you, pretty exciting stuff.
That indeed directly corresponds with another email that your mom passed on, or that you passed on via her. And she writes, "I think you were 5 years old. I would drag you and Shelley on a sleigh to the outdoor rink and let you whipping across the ice like the, it's spelled Dynamo. I guess it's Dynamo that you were. I can picture you right now. I was amazed. Love was in my heart watching you," which is just a great way to round out this email. And as she brought up, or as your mom has brought up your sister, you're a brother of two. You've got an older sister. You got a little sister. How was it growing up as a kid right in the middle?
Well, I think you're probably better off asking them. But put it this way, I was the favorite son. I was the only one, right?
Awfully hard not to be, but yeah.
No, but they were always, I'm sure, supporters of what I did. I mean, who was to know what was going to happen when I'm 5, 6, 7 years old, skating around like a dynamo, whatever that word means, as she said. Who would have known where the journey takes you? Like, no, you can't plan this kind of stuff. But Martin, I have to tell you something. Let me just backtrack a little bit about being creative. And I hope there's some young players listening to this, because being creative off the ice, you learn to be creative on the ice. So in the summer, in the back, we had the fields. We would have rolling fields, and because everybody running around back there, the grass would be matted down. Okay, so it was kind of rough, but smooth and hilly. So we would put our nets out there, whether homemade or whatever we had for nets. And I said, okay, tennis ball doesn't work as it bounces. So I figured out, let's roll up two pairs of socks and put tape around those socks. Ah, so now we have the ball to play with that doesn't bounce. That's what I created to play with on the grass. And when you play on grass or in snow where there's snow banks, what can you do? You can play the body, you can hit, you could fall down and get back up. That I remember distinctly.
One of the many great memories that you'll be able to share with hopefully a lot of people here on the program. The series is called 70 in 7. 7 episodes, and everyone is dedicated to one decade of your life. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to look back on some more memories from age 0 to 10 of the great Greg Holst. Back in a bit.
Win today, hockey, football. Do you enjoy listening to Win Today, Hockey O'Clock? If that is the case, then please rate the podcast. A 5-star rating or a review over at the podcast dealer of your choice would go a long way in helping to spread the good word of hockey. Win today, Hockey O'Clock, the hockey podcast with real and open-ended hockey conversations.
Win today, Hockey O'Clock.
Back on Win Today, Hockey O'Clock, back on 70 in 7. It's the first episode where we talk about the first 10 years of Greg Hall's great life and coach. We did a deep dive on Montreal of the mid-50s and late-50s, of you falling in love with the sport, of you becoming creative, and we heard a lot from your mom and the emails that she sent on with memories that she's cherishing. One last memory that I guess we need to tell, and she came up with it, and she said it might be around you being age 11. Maybe it's a little earlier. We decided to conclude it right on this episode. It's about a trip to Drummondville, and she mentioned a Volkswagen Red 4 or 5, and you immediately said, holy cow, I know what happened there. What happened there?
Well, I remember vaguely, but I do remember. We'd pile in that car, four or five of us, whatever it was, in that small Volkswagen. And, ooh, I have a story about the red Volkswagen, too. You'll love this next one a little later in my life. But we were going to Drummondville, probably an hour and a half away from where we live, Montreal North. And we're jammed in there. We have hockey gear piled in, just smiling, driving down the road, and it started pouring rain. And the windshield wipers broke. We could not freaking see. So how do we get to the game? Mom can tell the story. Maybe you can read the quick email. She did pull into a gas station. I remember that vaguely. The guy was great, helped us out, fixed them. I'm not even sure if he charged us. I can't remember. And then we got back in the car and kept going. This was like freaking, this was like fantastic living. All to go to play a game of hockey. God love my mom and dad and stuff they used to do.
Yes, she indeed said there was no charge on the windshield wipers. But when talking about the Rex, the red Volkswagen, the other story that I'd like, bring it on.
Well, that was when I was 16. You might want me to throw that one in there a little later.
I guess we're going to jump around a little bit here and there, and I guess we're going to mix up stories from decades and maybe place it in a wrong one. So why not start right here and do it from the get-go?
Okay, so the red Volkswagen. Now, I'm 16 years old, right, and I have my driver's license, which is absolutely, I was ready, I think, at 13. But I had to go to summer school because I didn't pass English, so I have the red Volkswagen. No, I'm at school and I have the keys for the red Volkswagen and mom has to go to the doctor. So I get a call to go to the office at the school and it's my mother. Where are the car keys? I said, oh shit, they're in my pocket. I have to go to the doctor. I said, okay, mom, settle down. If you go in my drawer, in the second drawer, in a pair of socks, you're going to find an extra set of keys I had made, okay? Oh, you little bugger. That's a true story. So just in case mom and dad would leave town and take the keys with them, I had extra keys made.
Jesus, what a revelation. All these years later. There you go. Not too bad a story.
That is a true story. Let's not even talk about unhooking the odometer. Let's not go there.
I'll refrain from it. We're still talking about the first 10 years of your life. You knew it was bound to happen that I'd start digging a little bit in your life and talk to friends and acquaintances and people that that have been in your life for many, many years. And one person got back to me and we'll hear from him many, many times over the course of the next couple of episodes. It's Lawrence Satcharuk. He's called Satch. He's your brother-in-law. And even though you met him many, many years later, obviously not in your first 10 years, he kind of tried to set the scene too. He's married to your sister. He is known here for half a century. And the way he got to know you and the way he describes you, I'd say we'll just listen to what he came up with and then we'll start talking a little bit about the origins of the characteristics that he's mentioning. Here's Lawrence Satcharuk.
Hello, Martin and fans of Greg Holst. My name is Lawrence Satcharuk. My friends call me Satch. Greg Holst, what can you say? Funny, 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 awesome guy. I met Greg while playing professional hockey. We were young, and both Greg and I were following our dream to play in the National Hockey League. As my brother-in-law, I can honestly say Greg is one of the most unselfish people you will ever meet, on and off the ice. Greg has made hockey his entire life, playing, teaching, and mentoring. And along with that, he is the father of two great sons, Michael and Taylor, and recently has become a grandfather. I respect him, I love him, and will always be thankful for him introducing me to his sister, Shelley.
We'll get to that introduction in a couple of episodes, but Lawrence Satcharuk, Satch made sure to label you funny, not only one time, not only two times, but three times. Funny, funny, funny. And also, unselfish. How did you get your humor? And where does the unselfishness come from?
Well, those are very kind words and very nice to hear and much appreciated. I don't know. I just, being funny is just part of my character, I guess. And as far as, about being selfish now, when I think back and I look at my stats when I was playing 10, 11, 12, 13 years old, I had a lot of goals and not many assists. And the reason for that was if I pass to that guy, I'm not going to get it back. So I think on the ice, I might have been a little bit selfish, but, you know, I tried to help people off the ice too, as best I could. But words must appreciate it. I think to this day, Martin, you know me a little bit. We do try to have some fun. We do try to have good laughs, whether it was the NHL, the TV we did, or the stuff we do now. I think humor and being funny is a really big part of life. It's a big part of family life, and it's a big part of teaching kids is humor, hard work, but also having a lot of fun in there. So very nice words, very thankful to hear that. And when we get back now to me being the outdoor player that I was, I did not know how good I was or not good or good or whatever until I met Charlie Tapp. And Charlie Tapp was playing for a team called Saint Vital. And Charlie asked me, sorry to get off track there, but I want to make sure we get this in. He said, Greg, I play on this French team and we play in an arena. I said, you play? There's a roof on the rink? He said, yeah. He said, you want to get a tryout? It was the Montreal North Arena. The same one that me and mom and dad visited this past summer again. And I took a picture in front of it. So here comes my tryout. So I'm so used to playing outdoors against 5 guys, 10 guys, stick handling. So I go for my tryout at 10 years old. I'm going to remember it as best I can. Michel Bidouk, Mr. Bolduc was the coach. Armand Lalonde was the best player. He was the defenseman. And in nets at 10 years old was Michel Dion. So I get to the rink and I go out to center ice. And Mr. Bolduc goes, here's a few pucks. I want you to go un contre un, one on one. He said it in French. And see what you can do if you can beat the defenseman and see if you can score. So I'm thinking to myself, there's only one freaking guy there. It's a piece of cake. I usually deke like 6 guys. So I went in, made a few moves, boom, scored, probably scored. I can't remember exactly, but it was not a problem to do what I had to do. And right away, it was, oh boy, here we go. The contract came out. They called. Mom and dad did not even know. I packed my little bag, got on the bus, and went for this tryout. My parents did not even know about this until they got the call from Mr. Bolduc. And that's when it all began. And I remember correctly, I had signed or was going to play football. And if I remember correctly, they said, no, you can't play football. It's just the hockey. But I also played baseball and ended up playing for St. Vital too. So mom and dad got involved. We went up. I had to sign the paper to register to play for this team. So now at 10 years old, playing for St. Vital, that is where the wild ride really began.
And we'll get to that wild ride in a bit and probably on the next episode, but I've got two more questions. How did your parents react once they found out that you kind of went behind their backs and went to a tryout they didn't know a thing about?
Well, Dave, you know, I did have a violin and I have a pictures sitting on the front steps with the violin in its case, and I am hugging this case. So they actually thought I was a great player, violin player. So the reason I stopped the violin, because it was affecting my hockey at school, because they were saying, what is that? What's in that thing? I said, it's a ukulele. I didn't want to say it was a violin. A violin and hockey just did not seem to go together. So I said, Mom and Dad, I can't play this thing anymore. Of course, they were upset, but no, they thought, wow, he went on his own to find his hockey. And when you mentioned about mom, all I ever wanted was a hockey net for Christmas. That's all I ever asked for because we didn't ask for much. That is so true. And I did get a net eventually, and I was so freaking happy. And I remember one time, Martin, I got a new hockey stick. I think it was for Christmas. I swear to God, that thing didn't leave my side. I think I slept with that hockey stick. So you see the little things in life that we remember, the fun. But I think when mom and dad saw that I found my own way to go play in a hockey rink, which I thought was unfreaking believable, like not playing outdoors, of course they supported it because they knew I loved it. And that's what I did.
With the next episode, we're going to transition to you becoming an aspiring professional. You probably developing that hunger to become a professional hockey player. But how was youth sports and kids sports organized back in the day? You had to go to a tryout your parents didn't know about. Were there clubs that you were able to join? Was that the only club around? How did it work back in the day?
Well, there was like, you know, if I look back at the pictures now with Armand Lalonde and Michel Dion and all the kids and Dupont, Rabai Landré, most of the hockey team, Saint Vital was in a league. Saint Vincent Marie was the top team. We were always the second. But we also played baseball together. So from 10 to 15, it was hockey and baseball with all these guys. And Michel Dion was the catcher and the goalie, so it fits. But before, and there was maybe 10 guys on the team. It's not like now four lines. So if you can stick Alan Skate and do some magic with the puck, you can be very successful. And I guess I really was. I didn't know how good I was, but obviously I was pretty good. But let me tell you one story at the age of 10, something that happened with the NHL. My mom's cousin is Forbes Kennedy, NHL player. You could look him up. Tough as nails. He is now playing for the Boston Bruins. There's six teams in the league. Boston is in last place. They are playing in Montreal. Montreal is the top team. I get a call from Forby, or mom gets a call. Does Greg want to come to the game, Boston and Montreal? 10 years old, I go to the game. Boston upsets Montreal 6-0. I remember this. Forby brings me into the dressing room after the game. I still have a couple of those hockey cards left. Jerry Toppazzini, Tom Johnson, Orlin Kurtenbach. I still have those cards signed by the Boston Bruins when I was 10 years old.
You know that they'll be worth a fortune. So whenever you dig them up and maybe you want to sell them, you can make a lot of money with them, which you're probably not going to do.
You know, when I think back, I used to collect hockey cards, baseball cards, war cards, civil cards. I had 3,000 cards. I had every set of everything. And I gave them all away.
Any more memories that you'd like to share from being aged 0 to 10? I guess we covered a lot of bases. You growing up, you not becoming a violinist like your parents wanted to. You joining a hockey team without their consent and knowledge. Well, they had to get their consent a little later. But anything else that we're missing?
Well, you know what's funny? All of a sudden, when I signed at 10 years old, playing tournaments was a big part of minor hockey, as it still is. So I get into this team and I'm a good player. So am I the top player? Yeah, Armand Lalonde was really good myself. Michel Dion was a great goalie. And you know Michel Dion at 10 years old? He played in the NHL as a goalie for like 7 or 8 years. I mean, this little team in Saint Vital, a couple guys kind of made it. Think about how exciting that is. But anyway, I'm not a couple months into signing with this team. And I remember this. Mom remembered, couldn't remember his name, but there was a little kid in Repentigny, Quebec, and his name was René Corbière. He was a red-headed kid, and he was 10 years old, just like I was. And I remember this, and I'm pretty sure it was the Maurice Richard Arena. We had a tournament, and the talk of the town was René Corbière against me. Like, how fast did this happen? Coming from the outdoor, a Hunsick rink, the Salk rink, mom and dad dragged me to these places, and not a few months later, and we're talking a couple thousand fans. Now, here I am going up against René Corbière, the talk of the town, the redheaded kid from Repentigny, and we went head to head. How freaking exciting is that?
You know, my head is spinning.
I remember his face. Incredible.
I tell you why my my head is spinning. I was just able to look up Michel Dion, and obviously so many other great players did you cross paths with and became friends with, and that we're going to talk about. Holy cow, is there a lot to talk about? I guess, well, call it a day for episode number one of
Mark,
70.
Can I throw in one quick thing about Michel Dion?
Go on.
To end this, and I'm not bragging, I'm not talking, because how was I supposed to know what I was from 10 to 15? I reconnected with Michel Dion 2 or 3 years ago through Kenny McCarthy, my good buddy in Montreal, through a Bible. They have a Bible talk on the radio. I rehooked, connected with Michel Dion. And he connected with Kenny, and they said, Holsti, sac, tabarnak. And he said, Kenny, the two greatest stick handler I ever saw, Mario Lemieux and Greg Holst, tabarnak. How nice a compliment is this? And this, he knew me on the ice from 10 to 15 years old. And that almost put a freaking tear in my ear. And I'm not bragging. I'm just going, I guess I could stick handle.
Jesus. I'm so looking forward to doing more of this. And hopefully this will help you to reconnect with a lot more people that were in your life, that need to get back in your life, and that need to give you a couple or say nice things about you and come up with great compliments. I guess we're going to call it a day for episode number one of 70 in 7. Episode number two coming your way in a week's time. We're going to talk about Greg Holst, aged 11 to 20. For the time being, Coach, so great to be talking to you. So thankful that you're sharing the memories and that you shared the memories from your first 10 years. Looking forward to so much more.
Martin, thank you very much. It's my pleasure. And boy, you're right. It brings back such vivid, exciting memories. Thank you.
Win today, Hockey O'Clock.
Kurz durchatmen bei diesem Wahnsinn. Und das ging rasend schnell. Der Traum vom Finale ist erfüllt.
Mittendrin statt nur dabei.
Fans, stimmungsvoll und hoffnungsfroh.